Everyone, this is Pam, and you're listening to an episode of the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which can be found at stutterrockstar.com and also freely available as a download wherever you get your podcasts. Today, as always, I'm excited to have another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story as a guest on the show today. So I'd like to say hello to Nide. Hey, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Pam. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well today. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to you know learn more about you and to have our listeners hear your inspiring story. So to get us started, could you formally introduce yourself to us? Who you are, where you're from, what keeps you busy?
I can do that. My name is Nide. I am from a couple of different places. I'm from Nigeria. I was born and raised there, lived there for 16 years, and moved to the U.S. in 2015 to South Carolina. I lived in South Carolina for 7 of those 8 years, went to college at the University of South Carolina in Columbia, South Carolina. And after college, undergrad and graduate school, I moved to Texas, Houston, Texas, to start with, to be closer to my family. And quite recently, I moved to Palestine, Texas, where I now work as a pharmacist in a hospital here. So that's what keeps me busy most of the time. So yeah, that's me.
Wow. So you're a woman of the world.
Yes.
Pharmacy. What drew you into the field of pharmacy, a highly communicative field, I would think? What got you?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not wrong. I knew I always wanted to work in the medical field. Growing up, I wanted to be a medical doctor. But after high school, and honestly, partly due to my stutter, I felt perhaps I could not be a medical doctor because my understanding of being a medical doctor was having to communicate with your patients a lot, having to just talk all the time. And for some reason, I thought pharmacy would consist of less talking, even though I had experience at a pharmacy that did not communicate that to me. Likewise, I was also interested more in how medications work in the body. And from one of my experiences where I worked in a pharmacy, well, I shadowed a pharmacist for a week and I just enjoyed the experience. So the combination of all of that led me to pursuing a career in pharmacy, and that's how I ended up here. I would say it is not a profession where you don't talk. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah. So what was it like when you were in school, like, you know, undergrad and graduate, you know, did your stuttering impact your performance at all? I mean, I imagine class participation.
Yeah, undergrad, not so much. I was covert for, I would say, most of my life. Undergrad, a lot of my friends probably did not know I had a stutter. I took a speech class, and I think that's one of the few memories I have of actually stuttering in front of a crowd. Graduate school was a whole different experience. Halfway through pharmacy school, I lost my ability to be covert. It was gradual, but it also felt like it happened overnight. And that was very hard for me to grapple with. I was back in the spot where I felt like I could not do the career I've chosen because of my speech. And it honestly felt like I was having a midlife crisis, even though I was only 20 something, you know, and thinking, what have I brought myself into? Like, can I do this job as a pharmacist? How do I communicate with my patients? Who wants to listen to someone who can't say a sentence without repeating her words over and over again? So graduate school was a little bit tougher than undergrad.
How did you manage being covert? I mean, you're pretty overt now. So like it must have been, I mean, for me, when I was covert for half my life, for me, it was largely not talking. So what was your covert experience?
My covert experience involved a lot of switching words. I think by the time I stopped being covert, I was a master at knowing what words to switch and how to, you know, avoid a stutter. Some people would describe me as shy because I think I also avoided some social situations or situations where I'd have to speak to new people. But my family with my friends, it was just natural. Interestingly, I was more overt with them in the sense that I didn't try to hide my stutter so much. I just spoke how I spoke. And in public, it was a lot more, you know, hiding words, switching my words, just trying to prevent saying either consonants or sounds that I knew I would stutter on.
And you said something very interesting, which resonates with me because kind of the same thing happened. You mentioned that at one point your ability to be covert, like some of the tricks and the techniques that you used, began to not work anymore. Like, talk about that a little bit. What do you mean?
I would try to switch words. It would not make sense. And I think being in a more technical field where in the scientific world or medical world, there are very few things you can switch around for your sentences to be as coherent as you need them to be. So I think that was jarring, but also just having a more visible stutter. It just felt like I could not hide my stutter as well as I used to be able to. It was like when I spoke, you heard me stutter, and I stuttered a lot more. So the frequency increased, the severity also increased. And like I mentioned before, it felt like it happened all overnight, but I think it was a gradual process.
Yeah. Did it freak you out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember I went reeling and it just kind of felt like I started to stutter for the first time. And it was like having to deal with my stutter again for the first time. Like, how do I speak to people? How do I approach situations in class when I have to speak? And, you know, the preparation of talking, the anxiety that came with that, the fear, the shame. It was like experiencing all of that for the first time again.
That must have been just like, that just must have been so hard, because all of that you just described, you know, is the under the iceberg, you know, stuff. You know, it's all of that that most people don't see about stuttering, you know, that shame and the fear and, you know, what are people thinking of me and how do I deal with this? And so how did you deal with that? I mean, did you just confront it? Did you gradually talk to people about it?
You know, for the first couple of months, it just so happened it was right when COVID was starting to happen. So this was early 2020 before COVID, but then COVID happened and I had, you know, the grace of not having to be out in public all the time, not having to, you know, speak to people all the time. I think a part of me just wanted the world to stop so I could have time to figure out how to deal with this, but it didn't. School continued, church continued. And I think for the longest, I avoided it. And slowly, I started to avoid social events, started to avoid hanging out with friends. And that took a toll on me. And in June, I had a clinical rotation where towards the end of it, I had to give a presentation that was slated for 30 minutes. It took an hour because I stuttered on every single word. And I just remember feeling like, this is it. Like, I can't do my job. Like, I don't know where to go from here. And it was then I knew I could not avoid it anymore. I had to face it head on. I had to do something because I could not go on living the way I did.
What was the reaction of the people listening to that presentation? Your, you know, classmates, your professors?
To be honest, I think I blacked out. I don't think I remember a lot of what happened. I just know it took forever. I know I stuttered a whole lot. They didn't stop me. They didn't interrupt me, which looking back, I'm really appreciative of. They just let me speak and they let me get through all the material that I had to get through. So they were very gracious. But afterwards, I got feedback, and I can't even remember what the feedback was, but I just remember them being positive. And I didn't feel terrible, too terrible, because prior to the feedback, I had a break and I Googled, you know, should I apologize for my stutter? And it's how I actually found your podcast, because it had been the first time, probably in a really, really long time, where I had such a prolonged stutter, or I felt like the world had a long exposure of hearing me stutter so much. So, and in such a professional setting, I had thought, you know, should I apologize? Should I say something? Like, how do I, what do I do? And like I said, I found your podcast, a podcast that was talking about not apologizing, you know, it was very empowering. So I think going into the feedback portion of my presentation after that break, I just kind of felt, you know, it is what it is. It's happened. I can take it back. I can't apologize, but, you know, I can accept the feedback as it's given to me. So it ended up being a life-changing experience for me.
Wow. So were they giving you feedback on your content or on your stuttering?
They gave me feedback on my content. Surprisingly, she didn't even mention the stuttering. I remembered her saying something like, you know, like, we want to be cognizant of the time, because, you know, people have other appointments, people have other things on their schedules that they might want to get to. But she didn't mention the stutter. She didn't speak negatively about it. Most of the feedback was about my content, and frankly, I didn't want to get into it because I also did not know how to I didn't know how to address it, so I just took the feedback and I just left.
And I'm so happy to hear that you did not apologize, because We don't have to apologize for who we are, and it's just the way that we talk, right?
Yes,
Have
absolutely.
you ever apologized? I mean, is that something that you did in the past? Please say
Perhaps
no.
when I was younger, there
Okay.
was a situation in school as well. I held a leadership position in graduate school, and I was presenting in a meeting to our organization members. And I think this must have been the first time I spoke in front of my classmates or my peers with a pronounced stutter. And I remember being so frazzled, and I said something like, I said, I think I said, I have a stutter. It's a new neurological condition. I can't remember if I apologized, but it sounded very apologetic, and I felt so embarrassed afterwards. And I just remember that being an experience I never wanted to have again.
Yeah. Well, good, because there's still people who apologize, for stuttering and, act like, it's a burden on the list on the list on the listener to hear us stutter. So, the more of us that are learning and comfortable with just open stuttering and, being unapologetic, the more of us that do that will help. This is so lofty and ambitious, but will help the world better understand stuttering, because it's we that have to help make those changes by, being open and vulnerable. So, when did you wind up seeking assistance? Like, did you get into therapy as an adult?
So eventually I did. So on that same podcast episode, I think you were speaking about the NSA at home conference, and that was something I attended, and it was the first time I ever been around so many people who stuttered and were open about it. And through that I sought therapy. Well, I was in therapy, not speech therapy. I was in like CBT, and my therapist, because me, not being covert anymore, did a number on my mental health, and I ended up being in th therapy. And my therapist had suggested, since the what's really causing a lot of your issues is your stutter, how about, going for some speech th therapy? Lo and behold, my college had a speech clinic, and she got me the contact of Dr. Adams, Charlie, who was a mutual friend of ours. And I met with Dr. Adams for the first time, and then found out that my same college had an NSA chapter, and I had been there for 7 years. It was like, been here for so long, didn't know there was a NSA chapter, didn't know that there was a speech clinic, but
Wow.
that is how I got into speech th therapy. So I did do a couple of months of speech th therapy at the speech clinic at the University of South Carolina with Dr. Adams.
What'd you work on, if you don't mind my ass asking?
And I appreciate that question, because I tell people a lot, like, speech therapy is very tailored to your needs. And contrary to what people would have thought, I didn't do any t techniques. It was more acceptance. It was a lot of on learning, a lot of my views on stuttering. I have a lot of shame toward, I feel a lot of shame towards stuttering. So a lot of that work was really working towards accepting that, you know, there is nothing I can do at this point that would take my stuttering away. And learning that I can have a good quality of life as a person who stutters, I can be successful, I can work as a pharmacist. So it was a lot of really embracing my stutter in a way, and finding new ways to live as a functional member of a society with this newfound gift.
Oh my goodness, gift. Wow, that's quite a leap from what we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
Do you really view it as a gift?
Sometimes. I don't want to say it's a love-hate relationship, but there are times when, you know, having a stutter and being open about my stutter kind of helps breed vulnerability with other people. And I think that really speeds up the process of getting to know someone, or just knowing that, you know, there are people out there that possibly are going through the same thing. People are more likely to be open with you when you share something vulnerable with them. And that has been my experience as a healthcare professional, speaking to my patients and going in with, I have a stutter. You know, if there's anything I say that you need clarification about, let me know, and I'll be more than happy to provide that for you. It opens up, oh, I have a stutter too. I have this. And they're more, you know, likely to really share what's going on in their lives with you. And I, in those times, I view it as a gift, because I'm able to tap into this connection that possibly would not have been as forthcoming without it. So, yeah.
Right. Wow. It kind of makes me think of something that I've, you know, said and long thought. I think a lot of people who don't stutter secretly wish that they could be as vulnerable and authentic as we are by default. Like, we're vulnerable when we open our mouths and stutter. And then we get that reciprocity, you know, with somebody else. And, you know, I agree with you. I think it's wonderful, because it invites, you know, rapport, you know. And I think I think a lot of people wish that they had that secret power that we have.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of patients, have you ever had a patient that has reacted negatively, like when you've told them I stutter, and you know, if you have any questions, you know, please ask. I mean, how have the interactions been?
100% positive, and knock on wood. I would like to keep that success rate, but I'm very thankful. Every interaction has been positive. I think a lot of people ask why I disclose, and, you know, is it for the listener? And I always say it's for me. I feel like when I disclose, it disarms the person that I'm speaking to. You know, you start speaking and they're making like faces at you, which makes you, the speaker, a little bit uncomfortable. But the moment I tell them I have a stutter, if you need clarifications, you know, that kind of calms them down a bit, and I feel like they're a little bit more receptive, they listen better, and it's just, it has always been phenomenal. It's been positive every single time.
That's awesome. That's really awesome, because that certainly makes it easier for you.
Yes. Yes. It definitely takes out the fear in talking, because I know, you know, the moment I have this tool of disclosure that just, you know, takes out the guesswork from them of what's happening. Is she anxious? Is she nervous? You know, I feel more confident going into conversations.
Yeah. Is that something that you spoke about and practiced in therapy?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I heard about disclosure for the first time at the NSA conference, and I got to fine-tune the sentences that I specifically use in therapy and got to practice a lot. Disclosure, calling different shops and, you know, asking, you know, what time they close, if they have certain items. And that was very helpful. And I don't know if Dr. Adams knows this, but it really prepared me for my future career, like the career that I'm in now. But at the time, it was really preparing me for the future.
Wow. Wow. Well, we'll have to make sure that he knows that. We'll have to make sure that he listens to this.
Yes.
Now, speaking of Dr. Adams, you regularly attend the monthly NSA meetings that he chairs. Yes. You know, so you were participating in therapy, but how did you decide to begin attending the support groups?
So in addition to one-on-one therapy, we also had a support, like a group therapy with other students at the school who stuttered. And I think at that time, it felt like I couldn't get enough of support. Like I had found this new, in a sense, family of people who stutter openly and who are trying to accept it. So I think there was the therapy was very helpful. Group therapy was very helpful. There was more that could be done. So I felt, you know, if there's a group where it's not just college students, it's people from all walks of life trying to, you know, live their best lives as people who stutter, that was something I wanted to be a part of. So I started to attend that. And honestly, it's something I look forward to every month, especially now that I no longer live in South Carolina. And frankly, I don't know anyone locally that has a stutter. So it's something I look forward to, you know, communing with my fellow people who, you know, go through the same struggles that I do. And even though it's once a month, I leave feeling refreshed in preparation for the next month ahead of me.
Awesome. How far is Palestine from Houston?
It's about a 2 hours and 30 minute drive.
Because I know Houston has a really vibrant, robust NSA chapter. Like they have like 25 people that attend a month, but that's a little too far.
Yeah, I've heard of that chapter a lot, and I cannot wait to get the opportunity to actually join them. I do go to Houston often, so I'm hoping and planning that one of these months it does work out so that I can join them and meet people locally.
Yeah. That's always really important. It's and for me, I know one of the most important things that I got out of stuttering support group meetings was meeting other women, you know, who stutter, because we are a minority within a minority. And I had never met another person who stutters until I was 40. So I grew up feeling, like so isolated. And, you know, I'd heard of men who stutter. So, you know, like when I first met another woman who stutters in person, it was very empowering and very inspiring, because, you know, I just truly felt like I'm not the only one, you know, I'm not the only one. And that just like lifted a huge weight off of me. And, you know, the power of support, you know, and being with others who get it. I mean, it just can't be overstated.
I totally agree.
Yeah. What's the most important thing that you've found from, you know, being involved with the NSA support?
That's a good question.
Put you on the spot.
I know. I think that life, my options are limitless. I think I grew up always feeling like my stutter was something that, that prevented me from doing a lot of things. But from what I've learned in the past couple of years is I can really do anything, regardless, in spite of my stutter. I can, shoot for the stars if that's what I'm aiming for. And that's something I like to keep in the back of my mind, because so often when opportunities come my way, I still think, no, I have a stutter, how will I do A, B, C, D? But having to remember that, and having met people who are doing great things in spite of their stutters, it's always a reminder that so and so has done it, so and so is doing it, I can do it too.
Wow, that is like a great way to wind down. That is just like such a positive and inspiring message. But I do have one final question. What piece of advice would you give to young people, particularly young women that want to go into, STEM careers or, healthcare, medical careers? What advice would you would you offer for those thinking, I can't because I stutter?
Another great question. So this is a two in one. My first one would be seek support. Seek a support group. Look for someone that has a stutter, someone that has a family member who has a stutter. It's very important to see other people doing what you want to do. That is always an inspiration. That will always be a reminder in the back of your mind that you can do it too. Second, you have a voice. Someone told me this 2 years ago. You have a voice. Use it. No matter how terrible you think it sounds, no matter how, no, you, no, no matter how much you think people don't want to hear you speak because you have a stutter, you have a voice, and you have that voice for a reason, and there is no one else out there who is like you. So that makes your voice very unique. So use it.
Oh my gosh. I love that. There's nobody else out there like you. That is like, that is probably going to wind its way into the title or the excerpt that I'll use for this podcast meeting.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much for being a guest on today's show and being so open and willing to be put on the spot with some of the questions. Thank you. People are going to be inspired with your story.
Thank you so much, Pam. I feel really honored to have been given this platform, and really thank you for your time and creating a space like this for women, to hear other women's stories. I think it's really important. It helped me, frankly. I want to say it changed my life and my perspective. So I'm appreciative.
Well, I'm grateful. So thank you very much.
Thank
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.
you.